Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kourula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kourula. We're here on Super Tuesday. Oh yeah, hope you got your votes in and you rocked the votes. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a really awesome, awesome portrait artist named Anna Wyckoff. Say hello, Anna.
Hello.
Woohoo! Our audience loves you already. So let me ask you this. I love that you're a portrait artist because that's so like Renaissance and earlier, you know, it was like a big deal like to do that. Yeah. And you really kind of capture a person when you do a portrait of them like that. So do you use, I assume you use oils?
I do.
You never use watercolors?
You know, I do paint in watercolor, and occasionally when I painted my son for the first time, I used watercolor speed.
Oh, okay. Know?
Expediency, but I like oil because
it's got definition.
It's got
soul.
Plasticity. It's almost, I think the art historian James Elkins called it, it makes like a scab on the canvas.
Ooh, I like that. That's awesome.
So it has a physicality.
You know what? I had a painter on here before and I never thought about this as a painter. I'm not a painter, but you know, you make this work. It could take you months, it could take you years, whatever it is. And then you may sell it or give it to somebody, and you may never see or experience that piece of art again, mm-hmm. unless it's through a picture. But it's not the same when you just take like a little picture of it. So it's like you are the most selfless artist, I think, of all the art forms. And I never thought about that in that way until this other painter that was on our show said that. So I'm delighted to have you on because I do think it's the most selfless art in a lot of ways.
That's it. I've never thought about it that way. And actually, I've only recently been creating art for someone other than myself.
Right.
I mean, for decades, it's been, my handle is a story I tell myself because I've always had that conversation of art with myself.
That's awesome. So what is the conversation?
Well, it's to look really deeply at the world and to pay attention, and in that attention kind of recognize the things that pull us together as people. I tend to want to focus on the things that pull us together rather than the things that
we need a lot more of that these days, especially.
Yeah.
So, is there something that's like a trigger? Is it like a newspaper article or like an image that you see? Is it a story that you hear, a song?
You know, in the series, so as I've kind of transformed into making paintings that I'm willing to sell or willing to find a home for and have and open up my story, it was started with a book.
What was the book?
So the book is Italo Calvino's Invisible Cities.
I don't know that book.
Well, it's really, so I have always loved Venice.
Me too.
It's
the best.
It's just such a special place. And is it?
I assume you got lost there many times because I get lost there every time I go there.
That's what it's for.
It's just, you know what? I don't know if it's the signage or it's just the way it's designed, but it's like everything looks the same because the shops are all the same with masks and, you know, whatever. And it's just the signs. I ended up getting lost. You know, every time I've been there, I've just been like, okay, I just made a circle somehow. I made a really awkward circle. So I assume you did that too.
It's, you know, and in that kind of a labyrinth, it changes your perception of time. So, I mean, the story is Kublai Khan talking to Marco Polo, and Marco Polo goes to all these different cities, and he tells Kublai Khan about them. And it's like poetry. It's very beautiful.
Wow.
And in the end, after visiting all of these cities, he says to Kublai Khan, but it was all Venice.
Every city was Venice. I just got chills.
It was just an expression. Wow. And so I, in these paintings, I'm kind of drawing upon that idea because I think Venice is really emblematic of where we are in the world. It's like the most beautiful.
Right.
The most evocative.
Yeah.
You know, and yet its feet are in water.
Right.
You know?
So right. Especially now more than ever.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's what that series is kind of about.
That's awesome. Like, Italy is my favorite European country. So, like, anything Italian. Like, I fell in love with opera first.
Oh.
And so that's what I studied. And I went over there and studied as well. And I just fell in love with the culture. I was like, I need to live here at some point. Like, for a long... Like, I actually have in the back of my mind, I'd like to just retire in Italy. And that's
Batman it. And I'll join you there.
Yes. I'm serious.
Yeah. No,
because it's
too.
Like where it's at. It's like, it's so... like there's so much passion and culture and art, love of art and art everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everywhere.
It suffuses their existence. And I love that. And I think... You know, I think that Los Angeles is coming around to that idea.
Right.
I mean, Los Angeles has become a city of art in every way. And I find it just so exciting. The art on the street, the, you know, every corner, the graffiti, the people, you know, everyone's suddenly listening to this conversation about art. And it's, this is how we can move forward.
Right. Because so art kind of unifies us, right?
It does. I mean, it's the way.
This is why I started this show, because I love hearing about people's processes. Before we talk about your process, I also want to talk, let's go way back. So you're a little kid. When did you first start loving painting?
Always. I can never remember. I always drew, I always danced, and I always wrote.
Wow.
But I always was always trying to capture things and, you know, the interesting thing, Nikki, is that I love all sorts of art, and I try to.
Me too.
I think that art, you know, people try to say art is, this is modern and this is old.
Right.
I don't like to look at art like that because I think that art is eternal.
It is. It's timeless.
So
if it's done right.
Well, you know, somebody else said that the pyramids are the most modern, and I think it's true.
Yeah.
Right. And the like Modigliani, he's the most, he can be so ancient, or Picasso or Rauschenberg or anybody, you know. So now we're outside of time,
right?
And it's interesting to me, even though I have such a respect for, you know, abstraction, I've always, even as a child, just come back to the person. Just come back. I can't help myself. I don't know. It's really weird.
Do you have any favorite painters?
Many.
I assume that.
For different reasons. I like how do you say her name right? Veha Clemens. Oh, I'm going to say it wrong. Selmans.
I don't know.
She's a painter, and she does these paintings that take years, and it's water, stars, and she labors over them. And there's all this silence, you know, in these paintings.
She contemporary? I mean,
yes.
Not to put her in a genre, but just to give her a years of living.
But, you know, I also respond to, you know, architecture. You know, I like the photographs of Robert Polidori because they kind of contextualize humanity in space.
Right.
I mean, there's just so many artists. Rubens for his bravado. Lucian Freud for his humanity.
Right.
You know, I mean, I tend to love everyone. You know, I just get so much from it. Even though you can't really help the way that you make art.
Right.
You don't choose it.
Right. It chooses you in a way.
You just do it.
Right.
You just follow it. And, you know, it's different from everybody else.
That's a fantastic answer. The reason I asked too is like Picasso is one of my favorites, and when I watched this show, the National Geographic Genius, they did this story on Picasso's life, and I knew like his different periods, but I didn't see like what exactly influenced him in these moments or his you know competition you know with other painters and bringing out all those other sides. But the funny thing is, it's like he just honed in on this. Being consistent with his art. So do you fight that, or is that one of the major challenges of being an artist where, I mean, you're basically as an artist always trying to top yourself, but there's also a consistency in trying to just hone in on that. Do you find that, or is it just subconscious that you're just not even thinking about that?
I try not to think. That's great. Try to let go.
Right.
The more I let go, the closer it gets. I try to listen to what's in front of me. And then if I can get there, it's a very nice place to be, because so much of life is surface.
Right.
You know,
and answering to the ego.
Yes.
Right.
And so to let go as an answer, I you know, and then you can't help it. You're your own person, and so it always ends up looking consistent. I don't find that that's something you have to. You can't help the way that you make a brush stroke or the way that you see color, you know.
Well, it's also like how you edit, because the way you edit is very different than with music or anything else.
True, and I mean, I tend to see things in space. Like I tend to contextualize a figure into really rectilinear space because that interests me. And in this series, I've chosen to use that space to represent different aspects.
Awesome. So let me ask you this. With portraits, I mean, it goes back into, I think the oldest portrait I've ever seen was like 1200s and maybe even beyond that. But what was the portrait that kind of like made you think, okay, I want to just attack part of this as part of what I do?
I don't know, because that would be too early in my child's eye. To, you know, my parents often took me to museums, and so I don't know what the trigger was. I know that I, like the Fayum portraits are marvelous in their immediacy, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't, there wasn't a trigger that I could honestly just say, that was it.
Well, it's like, you know, the funny thing is, it's like, I always think of Michelangelo.
Yeah.
Like, I just think he's one of the most badass like painters, artists, etc.
Architects.
Yeah, I mean, he's on that level of genius. But it's like, you know, he was just amazing at every part of different art forms.
Yeah.
And he kind of redefined what it was to be an artist at that time. Now, I think one thing that every artist fights, we're in 2020. So much has been done. So much has been kind of documented and been an influence in some way. How do you find a new creative voice doing something that's very kind of a throwback art form?
You know, that's the thing I straddle every day. You know,
you
wonder about relevancy.
Right.
You know, using something so ancient. But at the same time, I think that with these tools that have been used so well before me, I don't presume to have that sort of mastery, but everybody has a different voice. And I think that that authenticity is sufficient in the human experience.
Do you take pictures of people, of the people that you take portraits of?
Actually paint from life.
Wow. So you have them just...
I do.
Or do you just have an image in your mind, or do you have them stand in front of you?
I do. I have them stand in front of me or sit, and it's a very long process.
That's amazing.
I can attest to that.
You know what? I had a painter actually do a portrait of me, and he did pictures, because he was like, I don't want to have you sit here for 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, he sent it to me about 2 weeks later, and I was amazed at like how oils can, you know, I never really thought of how a portrait can show emotions from a still image in a way that is better than a picture. I mean, it really does. It's like putting a portrait up on, you know, a wall and seeing yourself through another lens.
Yes,
you know what I mean? It's not like a picture where it's like somebody just takes it. There's no interpretation when somebody usually just takes a snapshot of you. But a portrait is like a very specific image viewing lens from the artist.
There's a story in a portrait, and I think that's so in photography. And so in paint, you know, someone like Annie Leibovitz or Cindy Sherman, you know, they have something that they're telling you about the person. And, you know, the really interesting thing in being so specific, I feel like in trying to be so particular about this person,
right?
I don't know why, but that seems to make it more universal.
Wow. And does it affect the coloring, the shades, the shadows?
No, it just, in trying to get that person, it's almost like when people look at that specific person, it can become more people. I don't know why that seems to work that way.
So it's like you want to make it specific, but almost broaden the stroke by showing a lot of glimpses of everybody else.
It does it. For you. You know, like the closer I get to the person, the broader it is. And that's why I like to work from a person, is because there's thousands and thousands of colors in just that one space. And I mix paint for each spot.
Wow.
I mean, I don't start off with a palette full of, you know, colors. I mix it for that spot, and then I regard it, and then I mix it for that. And then I look over here and I see that this is cool, and you know, the reflection of your shirt, and you know, you're a little warm,
right?
You know,
and it's like you're also capturing the energy of a person too.
It's a con that's the conversation.
Hard thing. Yeah,
you know, if you don't have, I only paint people that I have a relationship with.
So that make it easier friends. To be kind of like completely honest.
It just makes me comfortable. I mean, I guess I would try to paint somebody that I didn't know so well, but so far,
it's people I love.
Yeah, and people I know, and you know, I just recently painted an incredible African American poet, Erica Franklin, and she's a writer and she's an artist, and you know, it's a conversation that happens between people, and if someone isn't giving you something to paint. You know, there's nothing there. So
right.
I think everyone always thinks it's just the artist, you know, the artist is, you know, getting all that material and mining it and recording it. And it really has to emanate from the person that's sitting. And especially for the sort of portraits that I do, because it's very time consuming.
Right. How long does a portrait on average take?
It takes months.
Wow. Yeah. And how do you disarm a person who's sitting in front of you, even if it's your husband or your kids? Like, how do you disarm them?
My child was awful.
I bet.
He wanted a painting because I painted Bassam.
Right.
And so he wanted a painting like Daddy. And so I said, okay. So I painted him in watercolor because he's like a fly.
Right. He's like, I'm only going to stay here for maybe 30 minutes.
Yes. So I painted him in watercolor. He said, no, Mama, will you please paint me in oil like Daddy? And so I did, and it was one of the most difficult things. I mean, he changed. I should have taken photographs all the way through, because he grew in those few months, and I had to keep painting and repainting
right.
the face.
Wow.
You know, and the proportion. And he went actually in that time period from being 5 to 6 and a half.
But there's so much growth in those phases.
His entire facial proportion was transformed. Thankfully, adult people don't really do that.
So. Right. You were pretty stationary until we get super old.
Yes.
Or so we think.
Yeah. So it's a really beautiful dialogue. But, you know, the collaborator has to be patient.
Right. Of course. Like, I couldn't believe how still you have to be. I think that's the hardest part.
Mm-hmm. I've posed actually for several artists, and over the years, and so I have kind of that understanding.
Well, exactly. You're more patient because you're like, I know how it goes.
Yes, exactly. Be really still. I'm not going
to
itch.
Right, right. But did you have to disarm yourself in any way to kind of just be like, okay, this is how I want to be taken seriously? Because I felt like when I was a subject, I felt like there was a moment. I know the moment he painted me, and I didn't know it in the process, but I recognized it after seeing it.
Uh-huh.
you know, because he was just like very fluid in how he was talking and asking me questions about music and the things that mattered to me. And he took all these pictures of like if I'm head on or I'm looking out the window. And the pose that he chose on was me looking out the window, because he said I was talking about something and I was like very deep in thought. And that was the moment he was like, that's mm-hmm. the image. And so I remembered that moment and what we were talking about. But how do you get in that place as a subject from your experience?
I just do what I'm told.
You're like, stand, sit.
I've ever posed for anyone. I just do. You know, I had the honor of posing for Robin Palenker and Theodore Van Runkle and several other artists as well. And I always just did exactly what I was told and gave myself over wholly to what they chose to do, and I was always really surprised.
That's awesome. Were they different?
Very.
Yeah, they must. They must see different things.
Everyone's so different. Actually, Theodora, in that question about watercolor, I had always worked in watercolor, and I was interested in painting in oil. And my friend, she's a very famous costume designer, Theodora Van Runkle, she encouraged me. She said, you must, you would love it, you must. And I was very shy, and she said, I'll sit for you.
That's amazing.
And so she and another friend of mine, Gary Foss, were among my first portraits, and they both sat for me, and I did. I loved it so much, but it took so long. But in slowing down and in being contemplative, I think it just, there's something there that we lose so much of in modern life that I just savor.
It's the story. Yeah. It's like the story of stillness. There's a power in that. Mm-hmm. And we're so, like, our attention is all over the place with cell phones and conversations, people. I mean, it's like you're able to communicate in way too many ways, where it's like that stillness now has power because it's almost a rarity.
It is, and I think that the handmade, and that's kind of the difference between photography and painting, even though I love photography.
Me too.
Is that feeling of the handmade kind of infused into every aspect, or even sculpture, or that handmade is so easily lost. And I think that that's one of the values of doing something as old world as oil painting.
Well, especially just, you know, most people are, they're using street corners as the new canvas. Like, mm-hmm. But I love the way oil or watercolor looks on a canvas. There's a certain vibe mm-hmm. where it's like tangible. You can see blotches of paint, where you can see where the brush strokes are. You see all these nuances that give the painting like a breathing, lifelike quality.
And I think the thing that I love too is that once you're done, somebody else can pick up the conversation.
Right.
And they have the energy from the energy put into it. You have that immediacy, that reaction. There's a connection there. And that's why some paintings really grab you.
Right.
Because you're reacting to that, you know, what was invested in the moment.
A very famous story about Winston Churchill. I don't know if you know this story. But he was going to have, I think it was his 70th birthday. And his wife got a portrait artist to make a portrait for him. Uh-huh. And he sat there for months. And he never looked at it. And then, you know, he kept on asking questions. Like, are you going to make me evil? Are you going to make me, you know, mean? Are you going to make me powerful? And the painter said, I'm going to make you. I'm just going to just create what I see, you know. And there was an unveiling of it. And he had a very kind of a very almost a frownish expression in the painting. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't a frown. It was almost a stoic mm-hmm. expression. And, you know, so he was perturbed from seeing the image. He hated it.
Oh.
And he burned it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I just saw, something. My girlfriend was watching The Crown, and they showed this whole thing. And I looked it up. And they said, yeah, there's no version of it, because he was so mad about how this guy perceived him that he burned it. And I was like, what a waste. Like, that is such ridiculous amounts of ego from Winston Churchill to not be able to look at himself, that reflection, to see one. And it was one of the top portrait artists. And I always just, I think about that story because it's like they created this connection for months. And then he just completely sabotaged it. It was just so sad. So anyways, I was thinking about that because when I was reading your bio, I was like, you know, I couldn't imagine somebody ever doing that. And it happened, you know, it's like,
I think that when you create commissioned work, you do have to take direction.
But you shouldn't, because they're hiring you to do your interpretation, right?
Perhaps.
Right.
Perhaps, but I think, you know, public perception is so carefully controlled, especially right. amongst the people who would do such a thing. I don't know. I haven't had that conversation yet. I mean, I'd be curious how something like that would go. I mean, there's many, like, I love some of the recent portraits that have been out, of public figures. I mean, President Obama's portrait, Becky Hindi Wiley, was incredible. But I don't know. I mean, that would be just so difficult to have somebody want to control their image so tightly.
Right.
And perhaps not want to look at a different aspect, not want to, you know, that's the thing about having the conversation, is the person has to be willing to give themselves over.
Right.
To, you know, I see beauty, but I don't necessarily try to make people beautiful. I think that something gets lost and always, you know, beautifying.
Right.
I just want to just do
see
it.
Real.
I just want to see it how it is. Everything has a filter. I think it's okay to just.
Well, I couldn't wait to ask you this next question. So you sent an image of yourself.
Yes.
A portrait of yourself. Tell me what that was like, because everybody knows the feeling of looking in a reflection and beating yourself up, or, you know, just seeing different, you know, maybe you're getting dressed up for a night and you're like, oh, I look good. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's so many different plays that a reflection gives you. A portrait is like this long extended viewing of one reflection, or many kind mm-hmm. of in one. How did you break that process down for yourself?
I've done two portraits of myself. One of my face and one of my body when I was pregnant.
That's awesome.
And it is, that portrait actually is very large. I can't remember the exact dimensions of my face, but it is a big portrait. And I actually made myself do it because it was so uncomfortable.
Right.
It was so uncomfortable to regard myself and the landscape of my face and this, you know,
right.
jarring honesty. But it was good to just make peace with those things and the uniqueness of them, and not try to be anything other than I am.
Well, it's honest and it's beautiful. That's what makes it rad. But what did you just stand in front of a mirror?
I did. I stood in front of a mirror.
How long did that take you?
Months.
So you just stood in front of a mirror for months.
Yeah, I did.
And just like adding to layers of color.
And it was really, it was very uncomfortable. It seemed very vain. I had a hard time with it. And then I had to, again, give myself over.
Yep.
To, you know, I decided to do this because it was uncomfortable. And so I did. And, you know, it was a lesson.
Did you edit yourself at any stage of the process where, like, you thought you were being too good to yourself or too hard on yourself? You're being one way or another. Because it's, you know, when you find that voice where you're like, the ego is completely dismantled. It's not even a part of the process. But getting there sometimes is a process.
Just the way that I paint is really honest. I'm just looking at each part and trying to just, so there's no space to make things better. I didn't wear makeup. You know, I just painted me just the way I am.
Right.
And I did that also when I was pregnant. I painted myself naked and pregnant. And it was, you know, it was the same kind of experience, the same kind of discomfort.
Right.
But the same kind of interest and yield.
Well, it's also you notice things about yourself in those moments. It's like self-discovery in some ways.
Yeah.
Which one, do you have a preference?
I don't know. Do you?
Between the two?
Yeah.
I like your face. I like your face and your portrait, your straight-ahead portrait.
Mm. Yeah. Good talk. Go ahead.
It's so somber and it's so honest and it's so refreshing to see somebody who's not doing the selfie thing.
Right.
It's the exact opposite. It's like looking straight into your soul, and that's what I love about it. And I can say, having been painted by Anna, I can say that your perception of yourself is always different than
right.
what it looks like on the canvas.
Right.
And I, you know, I fought it. I was like, can't you get my good side? Come on.
Exactly.
You know,
it's Winston like, Churchill over here.
look at this. And she's like, no, this is, just trust me, you know. And one interesting thing was, I wasn't thinking about it when I was being painted, but I was doing this, and I always wear different watches. I love watches, and I
right.
always wear different watches. And she painted the watch that was on my wrist, and when I didn't know that it was going to be in the painting, I saw it, and I said, I'm so sorry, but I've got to be wearing my father's watch. I can't be wearing this other watch.
Yes.
This is the most, my father's watch that he gave me is like my most prized possession.
Right.
Next to like my wedding ring.
Right.
And she was like, seriously?
But you know what's funny?
But she took it out, and she did put my father's
watch. Oh, you edited it. You should.
I did, because you know what? Forget them.
That means, you know, grandpa. And she, you know, and I wore it, and it took another couple of sessions, but it's a part of it.
But you're like, oh, you my know? God, please.
It's
you know, I had to
me.
Do that with, so we had a painter do one of our album covers, and he, in the album cover, he had two bass players in the picture instead of a guitarist and a bass player, the actual instruments. Uh-huh. And I'm like, hey, we can't have that. You got to change that. And he's like, well, okay, I'm going to change it in the graphic part of the picture, but in the painting, it's just going to be this. And I'm like, cool, but it's got to be that for the actual album cover. I'll have the original. So there's this little discrepancy between the two, and I love that. Mm-hmm. I love it even more now that there's, like, I hated even telling him, oh, you got to change that because it's got to have six strings instead of four. But it's those little details that sometimes you want to control the things that are going to make you, give you joy, that you're not going to look at it like it was a mistake. But the funny thing about you bringing that up, when I got a portrait done, I asked the guy, I said, does it matter what I wear? Does it matter, you know? And he's like, no, I'm probably just going to be painting your face. And so I just wore a Kanye West college dropout, you know, t-shirt, and I had this like cool vibey jacket, and he was like, okay. And I was like, I'll put the jacket, if I'm going to stand for a while, I'll just take the jacket off and I'll just stand here with a guitar. And he ended up painting the college dropout t-shirt. And I was like, portrait artists, they're hustlers. They're swindlers. So let me ask you, did he ask you, like, is there anything that I should be wearing or not be wearing? And did you just not want that to be part, an influence?
Well, for Bassam's portrait, I painted it white on white so that he's the only color.
Right.
So I did art direct his shirt.
See?
You know?
See?
I just wanted it to be all about the skin tone.
Right.
And like the hue and...
Well, it's just interesting because it's like, I didn't think that would be an influence. In the same way that you didn't wear the watch that you wanted to, you didn't think that would be... Because in your mind, you're like, oh, well, she knows my favorite watch, or she'll just make a watch that's, you know, she won't put it in there. You know what I mean? Because you're not thinking about those details. But they're breaking down all these, you know,
I would never think about. I'm not going to take things out that are there.
Right.
If it's there, it's fair game.
Right.
You put it on the table. I'm just.
See, but you know, here's the thing. Here's the swindle part of it. No portrait artist tells the person that. So we just, but I think they do that intentionally so it's not contrived. True or false?
Well, true. But interestingly, for the series of portraits that I'm doing about Venice, I actually did choose what they wore.
Hmm.
Because.
Was it a color or style that you wanted?
Yes. It was an idea. And I didn't know it until I saw it, but it was an idea.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you let them know. You're like, you need to wear this.
We look at some possibilities, but I did choose really specifically. You know, I wanted, you know, a Venetian red You know, I mean, there's these elements. Then the next person in the series, you know, is wearing just this very antique looking jacket, you know, something kind of uncharacteristic. He's worn it before, but.
That's interesting. So it's not necessarily, maybe a color is an influence, or if it's a style. Mm-hmm. But is it to you, is it a characteristic of the subject? Or is it the story you're wanting to tell of capturing the subject?
So I think that because of the way that I came to painting, and I've always liked clothing as being a representation of an idea of psychology as an extension of the physiognomy. And so I like to use that. I don't want to let anything be free. And so with the intention of the series, I wanted to use all the tools that were given to me. Mm. And that was one aspect in terms of finessing, tuning, directing the story that you see.
Mm. Now, you know, if you look at a lot of, not that this is a portrait, but a lot of people painted Jesus, yes, like over history, which is kind of like painting an imaginary character because it's not somebody posing for you or living, breathing right in front of you. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different interpretations. Mm-hmm. Do you see a subject like that when somebody paints a figure that is well known to be kind of like controversial because of how people interpret certain things, or their interpretations are kind of, they're skewed because of maybe geography or whatever they know about this, you know, this figure?
Well, I mean, I'm interested in all types of iconography, and I think they're just kind of arrows to send your attention somewhere else. And so people use whatever works for them, and I respect that. You know, culturally, cultures have depicted, you know, their beloved, their who they worship,
right,
in many different ways. And I'm interested in iconography as something different, but it's different than, I think, a portrait, you know, even though it's a painting,
right,
but it's not a portrait. It doesn't have that specific,
right,
person, you know, unless they're painting a specific person, maybe Rubens, or, you know, they had somebody who was, you know, but that person also, they looked for somebody who culturally aligned with what they were trying to say, you know?
Wow. You are a passionate artist, I can tell. So let's talk about the most famous portrait of all, Mona Lisa.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
Many times.
So tell me what you draw from it, because this is so interesting to me, because you're a portrait artist. So when you see the Mona Lisa, what do you see?
I see two things. I see the care taken in making the image, because you can't miss that. And I see the size as being so diminutive, and the brush strokes as being so precise that it pulls you into this tiny space. And then you step back, and you see the room full of people regarding the small,
right,
thing. And that small bit of real estate has the energy of all of these people. And I feel the intensity of the reflection between the two.
Mm.
That's, you know, I never can see the Mona Lisa, even though I've tried to see it, you know, when the room is fairly empty, you know. I can never see it without its context.
Hmm. You know, I've seen it twice. Uh-huh. I think two or three times, actually. And I saw it at different times in my life, different eras, different times at the museum. And both times, even the second time and the third time I saw it, it's the size of it that's so striking. Mm-hmm. Because it's an image that is everywhere, mm-hmm, you know. And I find that size of a portrait or a painting in general has a tremendous amount of power, Because when I saw the Guernica, I'd seen the Picasso's Guernica in books.
In a book.
And you see it on a little page.
And
you
think it's like the whole building. And it's the building, whole wall. Yeah.
So when I saw that, I fell in love with it. I mm-hmm. fell in love with Picasso all over again. Because mm-hmm. I had no idea. I had no idea it was that big. And then the Mona Lisa was the opposite. It's like I saw so much power, but I couldn't believe the dimensions. So tell me, this is kind of a two-part question. How do you use size to be a controlling influence in when you're making a portrait? Are they all the same size? I assume they're not.
They're not.
Right.
So when I paint for myself, when I have painted for myself, I paint smaller. I paint smaller. But in this series, I paint large, and it's so wonderful to paint both ways. It's wonderful to paint with intimacy. And
when you say small and large, give me dimensions. Give us a...
Oh, I'm really bad at dimensions.
Bassam can help.
Yay, big.
versus, you know, is larger than a person, you know?
Right.
But I feel like it's important, like for me now, I am enjoying working large because... even though I have utter respect for small works and I think that they can be totally involving, I feel like with paint, it's so enjoyable to make the large movement, to have the physicality, the dance of putting it on the canvas with those large moves, that it's almost easier, and it kind of takes away the, you can't be so refined.
Right, right.
You know, you can't, you know,
get to be loud and proud.
Exactly. And I think there's value in that for me because I can be kind of unassuming about things.
And what do you have it all just lying on the floor and you're just walking around it and painting it like that?
Well, it's funny because I outgrew my easels and then I was very lazy to get another big structure in my painting studio. So I fashioned an easel with my drawing table. It's like a Parsons table. And then I just put my chair on top of it and leaned the canvas up on that, and it works great.
Wow. And so it's all in one place.
Yeah, I have a painting studio in our house.
And what do you start with? I would assume, because I'm not an artist, that you kind of like do a pencil drawing of the face and the whole body, and then you start. But I probably would assume that it has nothing to do with that at all.
Well, I try to just have a little bit of very loose paint, like something very thin with turpentine. I like to use, depending on the person, like a very faint blue or like a very dull red. I don't know why.
You start with those colors.
Yeah.
Always.
Always, just depending on the person, one or the other.
Interesting. And does it? What's an influence for that?
I have no Nothing. Idea why.
No rhyme or reason.
Mm-mm. Random. Wow. And then very loose, and then I just try to just throw it up there as quick as possible. It's funny because I just started another portrait of my friend's son, Isaac, and I did that, and it was a mistake. It was one of the first, because I realized that I had limited, you know, I painted him in this chair, and I really realized for the purpose that I had in mind for him, I had to scooch him over. So the next time I had to redo it small. Oh. I've never experienced that, because usually I just do it,
right,
and then I stick to it, and that's that. But I had to make that rational choice.
And it altered the painting?
I did. I did the same thing, but just over there. And that's
so you shifted the painting.
I shifted the painting, and you know that's where you think, Photoshop would be just so cool at
right.
this moment.
Right.
There's the sketch, and it right. needs to be over there.
So did you have to physically repaint?
Uh-huh. I painted it out, and then I repainted it, but it was okay. It didn't matter.
See, you those know? Moments in music frustrate me.
Really?
Totally. Like I just. You know, I'm recording a record right now, and it's no computers, all analog tape.
Nice.
And so you will have a limit of 24 tracks. Mm-hmm. So some tracks will have, a guitar part, and then the guitar part's out of the bridge, so I'll put the bridge vocal there for a background harmony, whatever. And I ended up recording over a guitar part that I loved. And I was so pissed. I mean, it was anguish, and I had to go back at it the next day. So for a whole night, I was just like, I can't believe I did that. It was so silly. It was 2 seconds of guitar. Uh-huh. It was only 2 seconds. It was no big deal. I came back the next day and I just did it. But I was like so mortified because I was like, because the other thing is there was an effect on the guitar. Uh-huh. And it had like this kind of signal, you know, where it goes up and down. So if you catch it at the right time, then it's great. And I did the first time. But it's a small detail that nobody will hear except for me. But I was like, so in those moments where you have to shift that painting, to me, I'd be like, oh my God, I can't believe I got to shift this.
You know what? I was distressed. I was distressed at myself. Right. But, you know, and then it just, you know, I'm a really rigorous person. And so it just, I had to give myself over to the discipline of just doing it over.
You know? So how many hours do you think that set you back?
12.
And it's funny, you don't think about those hours. After it's finished, those hours just erase themselves. But you do remember the obstacle. Every painting or every work has some kind of obstacle.
It does.
I hate that.
Oh.
And every work of art is like that. I just think it's crazy.
The way that I've been working, though, it's because I don't come to the canvas with a fully formed idea. I come with a person.
Right.
And then the other ideas kind of seep in, and then they become like a graphic element in the back, you know. In the back of Erica's painting, I knew I wanted to paint some aspect of the Gallery Franchetti at the Ca d'Or in Venice. And so I ended up using a reference of some tile from, we went back and I took some reference photographs of these specific things that I knew that I wanted to incorporate. But it takes me a long time. I might do, as I'm painting the portrait, I might do one part and then I have to listen and see what the next part's going to be because I don't even know. You know, like I'm working on something on the, you know, this painting of Isaac and I know the setting, but there's some flanks, you know, because they're always kind of in an architectural context. And right. I don't know what those are. Somebody asked me, what's going to be there? Well, I wish you'd tell me. I don't have any idea.
You're like, I have no idea. I got another question. This last question.
Yes.
So how do you know when it's done? Because like with music, it's taken me years to know when something's done. And now I get it. Like the instinct is there. But with a painter, it's right in front of you. You can just retouch it. But there's a point where every painter that I've talked to about this, there's just a point where you're like, you put the brush down and that's it. You know it's finished.
It's true. That's true. But there is always that.
Can I top it?
No, just that, like, just that desire. But you have to put it down. You have to move on.
Yes.
You've.
But that's it. That's the instinct of knowing when. Knowing when is everything. So what is there a moment where you're like, I know this is where it needs to be?
It takes a while for me to come to peace with saying goodbye to the process of that painting. And, you know, it's hard to stop.
Because you can just keep redoing it. Right, right.
But, you know, I'm in the process of doing that with one as I'm starting something else. And it's a long goodbye. It's hard for me. So I don't know. I mean, it's never been easy. And I always have a desire to change. But I try to resist.
Great answer. Great answer. Where can people find you? This is off the wall. Where can people find you if they want to explore your works, hire you to do a portrait of them? Where can people find you on Instagram or your website?
I'm at A Story I Tell Myself on Instagram.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
A-S-T-O-R-Y-I-T-E-L-L-M-Y-S-E-L-F. I was feeling dumb. I was thinking, how do I spell that?
You got it. A story I tell myself. Well, Anna, you've been a wonderful guest.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to have you come back because I love this. I could do a 5-hour interview on this. It's such a niche market of artistry, but it's such a dedication, you know? So keep doing it.
Thank you.
And
thank
I look so forward much. To You should do a gallery opening somewhere.
You know, I've been in discussion about that.
Even if it's all your family, I could see Bassam in a new light. And I could say, that's not the watch. That's not the watch.
You could come visit the family.
I'd love to. No, we should. I want to see this. I want to see this happen. So I'll look forward to that.
Thank you.
All right. On behalf of myself, Ronan, we'll see you guys next week.